Welcome back, everyone. We're diving into some biblical archaeology today, and you guys sent in some really interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Excerpts from a lecture by Dr. Jeffrey Hewden, specifically on the archaeology of Deuteronomy and Joshua.
Wow.
So
fascinating stuff.
Yeah, we're going to be focusing on what these books might reveal about the Israelite conquest of Canaan.
Yeah, it's a period that just continues to fascinate, doesn't it?
It really does. It's like one of those pivotal moments in biblical history.
And absolutely.
What we're going to be trying to do with this deep dive is uncover how archaeological findings corroborate or challenge or even offer alternative interpretations of the biblical narrative of the conquest.
It's like a giant jigsaw puzzle, right?
It is.
We've got some pieces, and we're trying to figure out how they all fit together.
Exactly. And sometimes we're missing pieces, and we have to kind of fill in the blanks.
Absolutely.
So, to start our journey, let's go to where Moses ended his, on Mount Nebo in Jordan. Now, according to the Bible, this is where Moses died and was buried, but it's also where God showed him the promised land.
It's an incredible story.
Oh, I know. Can you imagine standing there and seeing the land you've been promised after all those years of wandering in the wilderness?
It must have been breathtaking.
Breathtaking, for sure. But Dr. Hewden points out something really interesting here. He says that while you can see parts of the promised land from Mount Nebo, the biblical account seems to suggest that Moses saw more than what should have been geographically possible. So are we talking about, like, a miracle here? A vision that went beyond the physical?
It's a possibility. And it raises questions about how we should understand these biblical accounts. Should we take them literally, symbolically, or somewhere in between?
Right, right. It's a debate that scholars have been wrestling with for centuries.
And will likely continue to wrestle with.
I bet. Huh. Now, I know some of you might be thinking, if we just dig up some ruins, we can prove or disprove the Bible, right?
Ah, if only it were that simple. Archaeology is way more complicated than that.
Oh, for sure.
We're not just looking for artifacts. We're trying to understand the context.
Right.
You know, interpret the evidence and realize that there can be very different perspectives on what it all means.
Exactly. It's not just a simple yes or no answer. And when it comes to the Israelite conquest of Canaan, Dr. Hewden lays out three main historical views to consider.
He does. He calls them the unified military conquest, the peaceful immigration theory, and the social revolution view.
Okay. So three very different perspectives. Let's break them down one by one.
Sounds good.
So the unified military conquest, that's the most straightforward, right?
Yeah.
It basically argues that the book of Joshua is a pretty accurate historical account of a swift military campaign.
Right, a kind of blitzkrieg through Canaan.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And this view has been supported by scholars like John Bright and Yigal Yadin, big names in the field.
Yes, very influential scholars.
Then we have the peaceful immigration theory. This one suggests a more gradual, peaceful integration of the Israelites into Canaanite society, maybe even over generations.
This theory was really popularized by Albrecht Alt.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Yeah. And there's this great anecdote that Dr. Hewden tells about how Alt came up with this theory. He was observing Bedouin herders, and he noticed how they moved their flocks around, and it sparked this idea of a symbiotic relationship, kind of like nomads and farmers living side by side.
Interesting. So not a hostile takeover, but more of a blending of cultures.
Exactly. A slower process of assimilation.
Fascinating. And then there's a third view, the social revolution view. This one is kind of a curveball, right?
It is. It is. It basically suggests that the Israelites weren't invaders at all.
Right.
But were actually native Canaanites who revolted against their rulers.
Okay, so that really flips the script.
It does. It does. Scholars like George Mendenhall and Norman Gottwald have put forward this idea.
And they are basing this on what exactly? What evidence do they have?
Well, it's a combination of factors, like looking at the social and economic conditions in Canaan at the time.
Okay.
And also reinterpreting some of the biblical texts in a new light.
So, for example, what kind of reinterpretations are we talking about?
Well, they might argue that the stories of battles and conquests in the book of Joshua are more symbolic than literal.
I see.
Or that they represent internal conflicts rather than external invasions.
That's really interesting. It really makes you think about these stories in a whole new way.
And it's important to note that Gottwald, in particular, was heavily influenced by Marxist thought, which adds another layer of complexity to his interpretation.
Okay, so we have three very different interpretations of the same event. It really shows how history can be viewed through so many different lenses.
It does. And it highlights the importance of considering multiple perspectives and not just accepting one narrative as the absolute truth.
Absolutely. So we've got these three main interpretations in mind. Now, let's get down to brass tacks and talk about some specific sites.
Let's do it.
And we have to start with the legendary city of Jericho.
Ah, Jericho. Such a famous site. And so much debate surrounding it.
It really is. I mean, it's portrayed as the first city to fall of the Israelites, brought down by divine intervention, no less.
Right. The walls came tumbling down.
Literally. And then cursed by Joshua. It's a central story in the conquest narrative.
Absolutely. But here's where it gets interesting. The archaeology of Jericho is a bit of a head-scratcher.
Oh.
How so? Well, early excavations by Charles Warren and John Garstang seem to back up the biblical account.
Okay.
They found collapsed walls that they dated to the time of Joshua.
So, case closed, right?
Not so fast. Later excavations by Kathleen Kenyon, who was using more advanced techniques, threw a wrench in the works. She concluded that Jericho was mostly uninhabited during the late Bronze Age, which is when the conquest supposedly happened.
Wait, hold on. How do archaeologists even determine whether a site was inhabited or not? What are they looking for?
That's a great question. They look for things like pottery styles,
okay,
architectural remains, and other signs of human activity. And by dating those finds, they can get a sense of when a site was occupied.
Makes sense.
So, Kenyon's analysis of the layers at Jericho, especially the pottery, led her to conclude that there wasn't a substantial city there during the late Bronze Age.
So her findings basically challenge the traditional view of the conquest.
They do. And they've generated a lot of discussion and debate among archaeologists and biblical scholars.
Wow. So does that mean we should just throw out the biblical account altogether?
Well, not necessarily. Remember, absence of evidence isn't evidence of absence.
True.
Just because we haven't found a big, thriving city at Jericho from the late Bronze Age doesn't mean it definitely didn't exist.
Okay, so what are some possible explanations for this discrepancy then? Could there be other factors at play?
Absolutely. For one, mud brick structures, which were common in that time, are susceptible to erosion and decay.
Right. They're not exactly the most durable building material.
No, they're not. So it's possible that any substantial late Bronze Age city at Jericho simply eroded away over the centuries, leaving very little behind.
So the evidence could be literally lost to the sands of time.
Exactly. Another possibility is that the Israelites might have reused older Middle Bronze Age walls during the late Bronze Age.
Interesting. So the destruction we see could still be connected to the conquest, even if the walls themselves are older.
Precisely. It's all about piecing together the puzzle and considering different possibilities.
Right. Anything else we should consider?
Well, there's also the intriguing evidence of burned grain found at Jericho. This was a really interesting find.
Ah, tell me more.
They found these storage jars filled with grain that had been burned.
Wow.
Which suggests that the city was destroyed and its resources were left unused.
So the people who lived there didn't have time to collect their belongings before fleeing.
It seems that way. And this discovery aligns with the biblical account where the Israelites were forbidden from looting the city.
Oh, right. It was supposed to be dedicated to God.
Exactly. So the burned grain could be a sign that the Israelites followed those instructions.
Wow. So are we looking at a real-life conquest as described in the Bible? Or is this just, I don't know, a story woven into the fabric of tradition?
That's the million-dollar question. The archaeology of Jericho is fascinating, but it doesn't give us a clear-cut answer. We have tantalizing clues, but they don't tell the whole story.
It sounds like we need to keep digging, both literally and figuratively, to get to the bottom of it.
I agree. Jericho is a site that continues to intrigue and challenge us, and it reminds us that the past is rarely simple or straightforward.
Well said. Jericho, it really does leave us with more questions than answers, huh?
It does. It does.
But I guess that's part of what makes this field so exciting, right?
Absolutely.
It's like we're detectives trying to piece together these clues from the past.
I love that analogy. And speaking of archaeological mysteries, have you ever heard of the city of Ai?
Ai. Yeah, it rings a bell, but refresh my memory.
Sure. So in the book of Joshua, Ai is described as the smaller city near Jericho.
Okay.
And its capture, it doesn't go as smoothly for the Israelites.
Oh, what happens?
Well, they initially suffer a defeat because of one of their own, Achan.
I vaguely remember that story.
Yeah, he takes some loot that he wasn't supposed to, and it throws everything off.
Oh, yeah, right.
But eventually, they come up with this clever strategy, and they're able to conquer the city.
So, a bit of a setback, but ultimately a victory.
Right. But here's the thing. The archaeology of Ai, well, it tells a different story.
Oh, in what way?
Well, excavations at a place called Et Tel, which is traditionally thought to be AI, they haven't found any evidence of a city from the late Bronze Age.
Wait, so you're saying there was no city there at the time of the conquest?
It seems that way, at least not according to the archaeological evidence we have so far.
Hmm, that's a problem then, isn't it?
It is. It creates a real challenge to the biblical account.
So how do we make sense of it? Does it mean the story is just, I don't know, made up?
Well, some scholars do take that view. They say that the story of AI was invented to explain the ruins that were already there.
Interesting. So they're saying it's a story built around existing archaeological remains.
Exactly. And that's where this whole debate about archaeology versus the Bible can get really heated.
Yeah, I can see how that would be a sensitive topic.
It is. But Dr. Hudon, he actually presents another interpretation.
Oh, tell me about it.
Well, he talks about this scholar named Alan Millard, and Millard has a really interesting idea.
Okay.
He points out that both the Hebrew word A and the Arabic name Eitel, they can both actually mean ruin.
Ruin, huh? So maybe the Israelites weren't attacking a bustling city, but more like a site that was already in ruins.
That's exactly Millard's point.
It's actually a pretty clever way to reconcile the text and the archaeology.
Right. It's a different way of looking at it.
It is. But wouldn't the Israelites have known it was a ruin? I mean, why would they launch this whole attack on a deserted site?
Well, that's where it gets even more interesting. You see, Eitel actually has these really impressive remains from the early Bronze Age.
Okay.
Which means that even though it wasn't a city in Joshua's time, there would have still been substantial ruins there, right?
I see what you're saying.
So maybe AI wasn't a strategic target in the traditional sense. But it could have been like a temporary stronghold or maybe a refuge for the Canaanites who were, you know, fleeing from the Israelite advance.
So maybe the Israelites felt they needed to secure this defensible position.
Exactly.
Even if it wasn't like a full-fledged city.
And it just goes to show how archaeology can really make us rethink our assumptions about these biblical events.
It really does. Yeah. I mean, I always pictured AI as this grand city with walls and gates.
I know, right? But the reality might have been much different.
Yeah, much more, I don't know, low-key, I guess.
It seems that way. So what do you think about Millard's interpretation?
You know, I kind of like it. It makes a lot of sense to me. But it also kind of raises a new question, you know?
Yeah.
If AI was just a ruin, why is it given such prominence in the biblical narrative? Hmm. You know, why make it this whole big deal if it wasn't really a significant place?
That's a really good point. It suggests that maybe there's a deeper symbolic meaning to the story.
Right. Maybe it's not just about the physical conquest, but also a spiritual one.
Possibly. Or maybe it's about the Israelites overcoming obstacles, even when they seem insignificant.
Interesting. It really shows that archaeology isn't just about digging up things. It's about interpreting them and trying to understand their significance.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And this brings us to a site where the archaeology actually aligns pretty closely with the biblical account Hazor.
Okay, Hazor, give me some good news. After all the challenges we've been talking about with Jericho and AI, I'm ready for some solid archaeological confirmation.
Hazor just might be what you're looking for.
Okay, good.
So Hazor was a major Canaanite city.
Like how major?
Like really major. The Bible calls it the head of all those kingdoms. And the archaeology backs that up.
Okay, now we're talking.
Yeah, excavations there have revealed this massive site.
Bigger than Jericho.
Oh, yeah, much bigger. Bro. And it had both an upper city, which was about 20 acres, and then this huge lower city sprawling over 180 acres.
So like a real metropolis.
Exactly. It was a major urban center. And here's the key point. They found clear evidence of destruction in both the upper and lower cities.
And this destruction, it dates back to the late Bronze Age.
It does.
Okay, so the timing lines up with the conquest.
Right, and there's this one find that's particularly striking. They found an overturned offering table.
Oh, wow, an offering table flipped over. What does that tell us?
Well, Yedin, the archaeologist who led the excavations, he believed that table was directly linked to the Israelite destruction.
So they stormed the city, overturned the table, like a symbol of rejecting the Canaanite religion.
That's how he interpreted it. It's a powerful image, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like you can almost see it happening.
And Hazor really is a prime example of how archaeology can provide this tangible evidence to support the biblical narrative, you know?
It is. It's like, yeah, sometimes the Bible and archaeology, they really do converge.
Absolutely. It's a reminder that while there are challenges and discrepancies, there are also these moments where they fit together really well.
So Hazor is a win for the historical accuracy of the Bible, at least in this particular case.
They could say that.
Okay, good. But Dr. Hewden, he also talks about other archaeological discoveries, right? Ones that are relevant to this period.
He does. There are a few others worth mentioning.
Like what?
Well, there's this potential Israelite altar on Mount Ebal.
Mount Ebal. Okay, I'm not familiar with that one.
Well, it was identified by an archaeologist named Adam Zertl.
Okay.
And he believes it dates back to the time of Joshua.
So could this be the altar that's described in the book of Joshua? The one where they were supposed to make sacrifices and renew their covenant with God?
That's what Zertl proposed, but of course there's debate about it.
Oh, there's always debate.
Right. Some archaeologists think it might actually be a watchtower, not an altar.
Another archaeological mystery.
It never ends. So what about the southern campaigns? You know, those battles that the Israelites fought against the Canaanite kings in the south?
Yeah. Yeah. What does the archaeology say about those?
It's a mixed bag, really. Well, some sites show evidence of destruction that fits the biblical timeline, while others don't. It's not a clear-cut victory for either side of the debate, you know?
So, more pieces of the puzzle, some fitting, some not.
Exactly.
But wait, I remember Dr. Hewden saying something about boundary descriptions.
Oh, yes. He pointed out that the boundary descriptions in the book of Joshua, you know, those passages that outline the territories for the different tribes.
Right.
They can actually be surprisingly helpful for archaeologists.
Really? I always thought those would be too vague to be of much use.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But they actually provide these valuable clues.
Like what?
Well, by using those descriptions as starting points, archaeologists have been able to locate and excavate some of the sites mentioned in the text. Helped us understand the settlement patterns, you know, how the land was divided up.
So even though the biblical account might not be perfectly accurate, historically speaking,
right,
it can still offer clues for archaeological research.
Absolutely. And it's a good reminder that the Bible, it's not just a religious text, it's also a historical document.
Right. It reflects the world in which it was written.
Exactly.
This is also fascinating. It really shows that the archaeology of this period is not simple at all.
Yeah.
It's not about easy answers. It's about, you know, embracing the ambiguity.
Yes.
And piecing together the evidence bit by bit.
And being open to different interpretations.
Right. Because new discoveries are always being made.
All the time.
And what we think we know today might change tomorrow.
Exactly. That's the beauty of archaeology. It's a constantly evolving field.
Dr. Hewden really emphasizes that, doesn't he? That archaeology is a process, a journey.
He does. And it's a journey that we're all on together, trying to uncover the secrets of the past.
It's amazing to me, you know, we often come to these ancient stories with these, like, set ideas in our heads.
Yeah.
And then archaeology comes along and kind of shakes things up, makes us re-examine those ideas.
Oh, absolutely. It challenges our assumptions, you know?
It does.
And shows us that the past, it's rarely black and white.
Right.
It's a lot more nuanced than that.
It really is. So after this deep dive into the archaeology of Deuteronomy and Joshua, like, what are the main takeaways? What have we really learned about this period?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that the archaeology of the conquest, it's incredibly complex. And as we've seen, there's a lot of debate around it.
Right.
There's no easy answer to the question of what happened.
Yeah. We have sites like Hazor, where the archaeology seems to line up with the biblical account.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have sites like Jericho and Ai, where the evidence is a lot more open to interpretation.
Exactly. And, you know, those different interpretations, they all contribute to the conversation.
Right.
The military conquest view, the peaceful immigration theory, the social revolution view.
Yeah, yeah.
They all offer valuable insights, and they challenge us to think critically about the evidence.
They do. And I think it's also important to remember that archaeology is an ongoing process, right?
Oh, for sure.
New discoveries are always being made.
All the time.
So what we think we know today could easily change tomorrow.
That's the beauty of it, isn't it? It's a constantly evolving field.
It is.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so fascinating.
Absolutely.
Well, folks, thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
We hope you've enjoyed exploring the complexities of the Israelite conquest and the ongoing quest to understand this pivotal moment in history.
And remember, the story doesn't end here. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and you never know, you might be the one to make the next big discovery.
That's right. Until next time, happy digging.